What is up, people? Welcome to the Damage Report here on a fantastic Monday, back where I belong. Super happy to have all of you here, Dragon Squad, and with me, none other than Rayvanna coming in. You're everywhere these days, Ray, all over the network, as am I. We're doing a lot of heavy lifting, I was saying before the show started.
Yeah, it's been a very busy past, honestly, month or so at this point.
Yeah, you were hosting on Friday, both TDR and the main show. So it must be exciting to not have to do that. I will do the heavy lifting, you do the heavy opining. We've got a lot to dig into. RFK Jr. is running as an independent. Staten Island MAGA is really mad about immigrants in New York. We're gonna also talk about, if we can get to it, plane rides for dogs, luxury. This is not a like a Sputnik situation. Don't worry, these dogs are coming back. Luxury plane rides for dogs, as well as, of course, some more Trump shenanigans and a senator appointed for the state of California in the interim. Who is she? What does she do? It's a little interesting. It's potentially polemic. So very excited to dig into it all with Rayvanna. And you all, of course, please send in your super chats, your comments, your questions, your concerns, your things. I might have a Blue Apron gift card to give out to the cleverest, most complimentary comment. Thank you. I'm just kidding. Don't shower me with compliments. Shower me with gifts. Thank you. So with all that said, you know what to do. You're liking the things, you're sharing the stream. And let's go get into the big news from the weekend. We still have a funded government. That's right. The Congress did their job. Kevin McCarthy did the thing, and we were able to pass a continuing resolution to fund the government for the next 45 days, people. So, hey, smoke if you got them. A pack probably won't last you 45 days, depending on how you smoke. But Joe Biden did sign this law, this stopgap bill to avert the government shutdown passed by Congress just hours ahead. This was Saturday morning, hours ahead of that critical midnight deadline when funding for federal agencies was set to run out. The measure will keep the government open only through November 17th. It includes natural disaster aid, but not additional funding for Ukraine or border security. It also includes a measure to keep the FAA operational. Cool. That's good. I do have an upcoming flight, so it'd be great if the FAA was funded through that. Not to make it all about me and everyone who flies. but again, this, it was basically, as Representative AOC described, a clean bill. Just a basic clean bill. It didn't have a lot of the shenanigans, the crazy stuff the Republicans wanted to add in or strip away, like effectively, you know, defunding a bunch of public schools, defunding the DOD for all the anti-defund language. It also doesn't have additional money for Ukraine, but that is expected to pass separately. Who voted on this? Well, it was 335-91. And who were the 91 people? Well, it was one Democrat who voted against and 90 Republicans. So truly, this was a Kevin McCarthy and Democrat joint. This was what they got passed, literally and figuratively, a joint. However, before that, of course, everyone was bracing. Federal agencies were bracing to close if no stopgaps were enacted. The armed forces and other so-called essential workers, such as air traffic controllers, airport security workers, and of course, the fat bear contest in Alaska would have remained. They wouldn't have remained on the job, but a few people would have remained on the job, but without pay until the standoff was resolved. Food and medical assistance to millions of low-income mothers and children would have also been in jeopardy. I mean, this, we talked about this on the main show. There were a lot of, you know, when the government shuts down federal workers, they're going without pay. These air traffic controllers are going without pay. They don't get back pay, people. They don't get the money that they would have made at any point in time. Kind of crazy, but Ray, I wanted to kick it to you about what we just did. Yay for Congress doing the bare minimum. And we'll get into all the catfights in a little bit.
Yeah, so obviously stopgap measure, but it's good that it was a clean bill, because what the Republicans have been proposing essentially is a defund everything that's important in our government and then give lots of money to militias along the border to shoot migrants is what they're essentially what the budget that they've been trying to pass was all about, which does make me a little bit right now. What I see is, and we're going to talk about this in a second, but there's, you know, for the Republicans who are always talking about how there's a civil war in this country, there's currently a civil war within the Republican Party between Kevin McCarthy on one side and Matt Gaetz on the other. Although ideologically, there's not a lot of difference between the two of them, but there's this power struggle going on within the Republican Party, and the Democrats have all the power now because of this dispute between them. Which is why we saw, you know, 90 Republicans voted against this, but all but one Democrats voted for it. Kevin McCarthy is relying on the Democrats to help pass whatever he's going to try to pass, because he's not going to be able to cut a deal with Matt Gaetz and the far right branch of his own party, because it's not about ideological difference. Like I said, it's about wanting the power that he has, wanting to see him deposed from his throne, so to speak. So they're not going to cut a deal with him. That he's given them everything they've ever wanted, and they're still fighting him over it. They got impeachment and they're still mad about it. That was one of their biggest asks. They got it. They're still PO'd for whatever reason, because it's not about the policy. So what I want to see is the Democrats come out strong and not capitulate, and not when we do actually see them pass a real budget, not just a continuing resolution. I want to see them not capitulate to this increase in funding for ICE and while defunding all of our other essential programs, because I think that the Democrats have in the past showed a weakness and a willing to give in to these, to acquiesce to the demands of the right wing in times when they don't need to. This is a time they don't need to. They have a lot of power. Let's pass a real budget. Let's make Kevin McCarthy increase funding for essential services and for and not cut the things that he's been flirting with cutting. So I just want to see a strong Democratic fight here for a really good budget.
Right. And if there is any time to do it, it's now, because as you mentioned, there is infighting within the Republican Party. They have no idea what they want. They're not in agreement on anything. Every time they get something, they get mad and throw a tantrum and throw it down and are like, no, I didn't want that toy. And so it's like, well, okay, I really don't know what we're working with here. I do think it's important to note that, like, President Biden and like whoever is running POTUS's Twitter account has been very, very spicy in terms of, you know, the statement from the White House has been, this should have never happened. This is absolutely absurd. I believe there was some sort of statement from the White House on Twitter that was like, oh, good, baby step, you know, next step, actually pass resolution. This was initially when Kevin McCarthy was like, you know, we've got some progress, or however many articles of agreement they were working on. But it seems like you're right, that at the end of the day, McCarthy relied on people who are in the office of power, in their congressional seats, to actually run government and to represent people, not people who are there to throw tantrums. And so, hey, guess he's a sellout? I don't know. But let's get into some of that drama, because Kevin McCarthy definitely relied on Democrats to pass that continuing resolution and to fund the government for 45 more days. Thank God. But of course, there is fallout from one man in particular. Let's get into this catfight. Take a look.
That's all right if Republican and Democrats join together to do what is right. If somebody wants to make a motion against me, bring it. There has to be an adult in the room.
Are you going to move to oust him?
Kevin McCarthy's going to get his wish. I don't think the adult in the room would lie to House conservatives. And that is exactly what Kevin McCarthy did. If at this time, next week, Kevin McCarthy is still Speaker of the House, it will be because the Democrats bailed him out and he can be their speaker, not mine.
So when do you make this move?
You'll be seeing it this week.
Do you really think that Democrats are going to vote to remove Kevin McCarthy because he made a deal with Democrats?
No. I actually think Democrats are going to bail out Kevin McCarthy. So this is an exercise to show the American people who really governs you and how that governing occurs.
What? Okay, so first we saw Kevin McCarthy basically say, bring it. We all know who he's talking about. He's talking about Matt Gaetz. And Matt Gaetz saying, oh, I'm going to make sure that Kevin McCarthy is not speaker single-handedly, which actually, by the way, it only does take a single vote to trigger a vote to try and remove Kevin McCarthy, which I believe, Ray, wasn't this part of the entire process for getting him elected in the first place? Was like, okay, we'll be speaker, but if any one of us wakes up on the wrong side of the bed and or wants an ethics investigation dropped against us, Matt Gaetz, we're going to trigger a vote of no confidence and we'll do this whole thing all over again.
Yeah, that was, it was something they've been threatening since before Kevin McCarthy even won to be the speaker. But I'll say Matt Gaetz has been a bit of a coward. He left the motion to vacate, I believe it's called, the form for it in the bathroom so that Kevin McCarthy would find it. But he hasn't done it yet. And like, when, if not now, then when, Matt Gaetz? You've been, you know, playing, toying with this idea for months now and you've never done it. And despite publicly criticizing Kevin McCarthy every single day in the news. So
yeah,
do it. Just stop being a coward. Do it if you're going to do it.
Motion to vacate. And indeed. And he's again, McCarthy does. I mean, Gaetz doesn't know what he wants. Everyone thinks he's a pariah and obnoxious. But I will say the one thing that Gaetz said was that Democrats would bail McCarthy out. I'm not so sure. Mm-hmm. In fact, AOC this weekend said something to the effect of, I mean, Kevin McCarthy's a terrible leader. Now, the question is, do they have anyone better down the line? No, probably not. But don't be so quick to think that all Democrats believe that Kevin McCarthy should lead the House. But here is McCarthy, his full remarks responding to Matt Gaetz.
He says he's coming for you. Can you survive?
Yes, I'll survive. You know, this is personal with Matt. Matt voted against the most conservative ability to protect our border, secure our border. He's more interested in securing TV interviews than doing something. He wanted to push us into a shutdown, even threatening his own district with all the military people there who would not be paid, only because he wants to take this motion. So be it, bring it on, let's get over with it, and let's start governing. If he's upset because he tried to push us in a shutdown, and I made sure government didn't shut down, then let's have that fight.
Well, you didn't really make sure that, I mean, like, Democrats helped you. And we'll get into exactly how they helped, because this, again, this new resolution was floated in the early morning on Saturday, and there was an hour to review the text of it. Democrats did a few things to delay and a few things to not delay, but were supposed, imagined that they were done to delay it. But look, Matt Gaetz is not totally alone. Kevin McCarthy also faces challenges from, you know, far right extremists in his party. The extremists of the extremists, of course, like Andy Biggs of January 6 fame, saying instead of siding with his own party today, Kevin McCarthy sided with 209 Democrats to push through a continuing resolution that maintains the Biden, Pelosi, Schumer spending levels and policies. He allowed the DC Uniparty. What? Is that a new line? To win again, should he remain Speaker of the House? So, Rivana, we've avoided a shutdown, but we may be thrust into another circus, into another like motion to vacate. And then who do they have? Who else is there that is actually going, that people are going to rally around? It's just, and also, what are their demands at this point? Yeah. Are they actually going to try and like make Lloyd Austin's salary a dollar?
I think it's really interesting because you raise a good point. I don't think either that the Democrats will coalesce to support McCarthy and his speakership. And I think that McCarthy has been the beneficiary of some relatively good press in being able to rewrite his history. I mean, this is a guy who voted against certifying election results in Arizona, right? This is a guy who literally attempted to overthrow democracy in our country. He is far right. He is a far right member of the Republican Party to the extent that there's even the existence of a moderate Republican, but he is part of the far right of the party. But he's been able to sort of recast himself as a more sensible person because of the extreme elements of the party, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz. And I think that the Republicans are severely overplaying their hands here because right now, most Americans blame the Republicans more than they blame the Democrats for what's going on. If for what was an impending shutdown, the public, even Republicans themselves, blamed Republicans more than they blamed Democrats. Most people's opinion is just, oh, everyone in Congress sucks and right, it's everybody's right. fault. But they weren't winning any favors. Matt Gaetz went on TV and said that he has 10,000, you know, TSA workers or, you know, federal workers who would be forced to work without pay in his district. But that was a sacrifice he was willing to make on their behalf. I mean, it's absurd to me that they just don't seem to recognize that all they're doing in this power play is harming their electoral chances, because we have coming up, you know, everyone in the House is up for re-election, as they are every 2 years. And they have a very narrow margin, you know, of a lead in the House. And there's some really tough purple districts that they have to contend yep. with. And every time Kevin McCarthy capitulates to the Matt Gaetzes, those districts go more and more blue.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think it's important to remember that individually, the moderate wing is just kind of BS. There is no moderate wing of the Republican Party. However, there are more purple districts and they do feel under threat by their own constituents and their voters. So if they're doing anything, if anyone's holding them accountable, it is their voters. And so that's something to, you know, work with, to capitalize on for Democrats in those districts.
Fire alarm. Capitol Police are questioning him right now because it's on video. He violated the exact same law that January 6th defendants are being prosecuted for every single day. He violated the exact same law, interrupting an official proceeding. And by pulling a fire alarm, it's on video, and the Capitol Police have the information.
Did you see?
This is outrageous. They have it on video.
Have you seen the video?
I haven't seen the video yet, but I'm going to be demanding it. I'm demanding that the Department of Justice prosecute him the same way they've prosecuted January 6th defendants.
Yes, January 6th, notoriously triggered by a fire alarm in not the Capitol building. I don't know if you guys remember that, but that truly was, yes, the cop who was, you know, beaten by a Blue Lives Matter flag. But no. It was apparently an emergency exit that went off. But okay, so what actually happened? So Representative Jamal Bowman, he explains. He was in the Cannon building trying to get to the Capitol to vote. And he says that he basically, in order to expedite getting out there, went through an emergency exit, thought that actually touching the fire alarm might open it. And I'll tell you why he might be right. But here was his statement. He said, I want to personally clear up confusion surrounding today's events. Today, as I was rushing to make a vote, came to a door that's usually open for votes, but today would not open. I am embarrassed to admit I activated the fire alarm, mistakenly thinking it would open the door. I regret this and sincerely apologize for any confusion, but it was not me trying to delay any vote. It was the exact opposite. I was trying to urgently get to the vote, which I ultimately did, and joined my colleagues in a bipartisan effort to keep our government open. He's obviously meeting with the proper authorities. Again, he was in a different building. Yes, that building was momentarily evacuated, but nobody on the floor was evacuated. So nowhere where the actual votes were going down, that was undisturbed. But of course the right is like, no, he did it. Oh my God. And even I feel like just Ray, like the initial, like Jamal Bowman is very much like he is a like an offensive representative. He'll get into shouting match. It matches. It's great. I love him. And so there was a part of my brain that was like, wait a minute, did he? Because that would be bad, you know? No, he didn't. Here's the door he went through though. And this is like a fun sign. That's one of those like parking signs where you're like, wait a minute, can I park here or not? It says, emergency exit only, push until alarm sounds 3 seconds. Door will unlock in 30 seconds. Very confusing. Will the alarm sound? Won't it? Is this good? Is this bad? It's kind of an easy mistake. Again, not even in the Capitol building, but this was a fun little like hot goss in the middle, like just like kind of a GOP chew toy in the middle of like them completely abdicating their responsibilities as elected representatives.
The reasoning that they were giving behind Jamal Bowman doing this is crazy. He voted in favor of it. He voted to pass it. Why would he need to delay it? Which is what I don't get. Also, confession, I have pushed one of those emergency doors before. I'm not in any building around the Capitol, but because I was also confused by that sign. I will say there is an aspect of the story that I think is really negative, is that Politico published this with no firsthand knowledge of it, without viewing the video. They published a story saying that he did this to delay the vote, that he pulled the fire alarm, which he didn't pull anything. He pushed a door. They published that with their only source being a Republican operative. They put it out there way too early, and they helped push this narrative. Not just Political, but other, you know, typically reputable news sources pushed this story forward, absence of any evidence, and before they received comment from Jamal Bowman, who makes a perfectly reasonable point, especially considering that door is typically unlocked.
Right.
They can usually use that door. He was just confused.
He was trying to get to vote. And the other thing to note is, like, there were delays, but, like, you know, the minority speaker of the House, Hakeem Jeffries, was participating in one of those delays. And the reason there were delays, deliberate delays, Hakeem Jeffries spoke for about 50 minutes. It's some sort of like last minute filibuster thing that he can do, is because they were trying to read the text of the resolution that was given to them with only an hour to prep. So, like, I was digging into this, and it's like, yeah, Hakeem Jeffries did that. Jamal Bowman doesn't have the authority to delay anything, and especially not in a separate building. You know, when you trigger a fire alarm and then the next door building has to evacuate? No, that never happens. But you're totally right. If you look this story up, it is nothing but he pulled, like he did it on purpose versus he triggered it accidentally, like, they need to correct it, because as it stands, it's like, you know, a cantankerous progressive happens to be a black man, pulls fire alarm to destroy Congress. Like, it's just sick and such a distraction. Let's move on. And by move on, I mean, let's take a break. First break, we'll be right back. See you in a sec. Welcome back to the Damage Report. Francesca Fiorentini here and Ravana over there. Gonna get into this next segment because the anti-immigrant fervor is high, even in so-called blue states like New York. Take a look. Fun, yeah, fun. That is anti-immigrant protesters, xenophobes, racists, protesting in Staten Island outside of a detention center. 200 people gathered on Thursday night to shine high power flashlights, is what you saw there, on the windows of people who are being held. We're talking asylum seekers, about 60 of them who are in these temporary accommodations. Their leader, this is fun, is a guy named Johnny Tobacco, which just sounds like Joe the Camel, like runner up. Like, this is like what they were pitching, and they're like, nah, the camel's better. Johnny Tobacco, who's a Bitcoin turned Newsmax host and wears an oversized blue pinstripe suit and slick back hair, stood on a truck bed and bellowed in a gravelly voice through a PA system that was turned up so loud that this reporter's ears were still ringing hours later. This is according to Vice. Tobacco is one of the organizers, conceded in a short interview later on that the decibel level was by design. The organizers wanted to send a deafening message to their new neighbors. You're not welcome here. And so again, this is all because New York is experiencing an influx of migrants seeking asylum, specifically and interestingly from Venezuela, which we can get into a little bit. There are numerous temporary housing shelters around the tri-state area. There are only two in Staten Island among many in other places. But Staten Island, notoriously, other than Pete Davidson, which I thought he fixed that place, has a lot of Republicans. And there has been other protests on Staten Island. So 10 protesters were actually arrested for trying to block a bus carrying asylum seekers in New York. One of the protesters also was assaulted an officer. And it's just fun, Ravana, because I've you know, I kind of came up politically in New York, done a lot of protesting in New York. If you have a decibel level, like sound amplification that is above a certain level, or even if you have sound amplification, you will get arrested. Like your entire protest will be deemed illegal. You will be arrested. Obviously these guys are blocking the bus, but like, it's just wild to me that they are allowed to get away with this to the degree that they are. And that, I mean, we'll see as the insanity continues. But yeah, just, I guess, reactions to this type of protest.
Yeah, it's particularly heinous. These are the same people who will say in the same breath that they want people to come here the right way, the legal way, and then they'll do these sort of protests towards asylum seekers who did come here the right way. They did follow the legal process of seeking asylum. They've done the right steps. These are not undocumented immigrants, which it's wrong to treat them this way anyway. But these are the people who are championing that idea, which, by the way, I've worked in immigration law. Coming here the right way, as far as immigrating here goes, is damn near impossible. Specifically, yeah. Takes about 20 years for some applications to be processed, depending on, even if you have family members here. It's not easy to do that. So it's so heinous to be standing outside. And we've had this in Chicago, where I am too. We've seen a massive influx of asylum seekers, particularly because of the busing programs of Florida and of Texas. They'll tell these people that there's housing waiting for them. And I just saw, because I live close to one of the police precincts where they're keeping the asylum seekers here in Chicago, they have them sleeping in tents. Yep. Outside of the police precinct. These people are being treated like less than dirt. They're being promised all these things. They're literally being trafficked by these governors of these right-wing Republican states. And then they're being treated by dirt when they get to these what are supposed to be blue states that should be more welcoming to immigrants. It's every step of the process is sad, especially when you think about what they've suffered through to get here in the first place.
You know, I mean, to say nothing of citizens who also sleep in tents, and that the right doesn't give to, you know, whatever, that doesn't care about at all. Like, oh yeah, they came, they were born here and they're sleeping outside. Do you care about that? Do you wanna house those folks? No, we don't wanna do that either. What's interesting about this particular protest is actually these guys won in Staten Island. They won, basically a shutdown of this particular facility. They were handed a victory when a judge ruled that the city's decision to house asylum seekers in the school was a violation of a decades-old zoning regulation for homeless shelters in residential areas. The judge ordered that the facility be vacated, but City Hall reportedly plans to appeal that ruling. So again, this is them, they sort of already won, but that's not enough. And in fact, whenever there are anti-immigrant protests, you know who's gonna show up. It's the same people who show up to school board meetings every time there's like Gay Pride Month, the Proud Boys. And in fact, the Proud Boys have been touting their newly formed Staten Island chapter. And this week, another group, the Nationalist Club, active in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New York, Delaware, and Maryland, posted a photo of an earlier Staten Island protest with a caption writing, "These migrants will assault our women and girls, attack our men and boys, and replace us in our own country. The only solution is to organize against this invasion." Fun? No, they're not going to replace you. Because here's the thing, they're going to work, unlike whatever you do, which is just sort of like coast off of, I don't know, your parents' money, or you sold a business. I don't know, whatever it is, you got your Brooks Brothers khakis on. You're a sad person. Migrants seeking asylum? No, they just want to contribute. They just kind of want to live their lives. In fact, they are not going to be at school board meetings shouting at teachers for supporting gay students. That's not what they're going to be doing. The last thing I'll say on this, Ravana, before we move on, is that, you know, people think that this is going to be an issue sort of ramping up towards the election, that they're going to hit Biden on it, etc. And I just feel like there's one very simple solution, especially when it comes to asylum seekers from Venezuela, which is help Venezuela. Like, stop trying to topple the government. Stop sanctioning the government, which only impacts people, and try to figure out, try to work with Venezuela. Try to aid Venezuela, no strings attached, right? Like this is not hard. There's a reason that people are actually migrating from that country, which is so interesting because it's like, we're trained by the right to like, you know, oh, we accept all Cuban migrants, anyone from a so-called socialist country, we'll accept, except for Venezuelans. Anyway, final thoughts.
First of all, I totally agree that we just need to stop messing with Venezuela and stop trying to install an unelected and unpopular president under the guise of promoting democracy in the country. They don't want him. Stop trying to make Guaido a thing. That's number one. But number two, if you'll notice the names of these organizations, they're literally like Waffen SS, Moms for Waffen SS, Nazis of America. That's national, what was it, nationalist, socialist, or whatever. They're literally calling themselves Nazis and they're doing blood and soil. They're saying that they're coming here to rape our wonderful white women and they're trying to replace us. I mean, there it is, Nazi rhetoric. These are Nazis in America. And that is a much bigger threat than any migrant has ever been to this country.
Please clip that, whatever, just shoot, that's a clip. Thank you, because agreed, underscored. All right, let's move on to this. You gotta have some Trump news, you know, because John's not here to, you know, waterboard us with it. So we're gonna go into this.
California was once a symbol of American success. Today, under the radical left fascists and Marxists that run your state, that's who's running your state, bad people. It's becoming a symbol of our nation's decline.
You know, it's interesting if you're going to talk so much trash about a state and yet you're in the state. You ever go to a place and you're like, hey, thank you for having me, Anaheim, California, in this case. Your state sucks. I hate this place. Ew. Not always a way to get a warm welcome, but hey, it's Donald Trump. When he was inaugurated as president, he called basically America a terrible place. Amazing. So there he was, obviously talking about how supposedly this state is run by the far left. But first, he echoed again his opinion on how this state can combat California, this state can combat wildfires.
And I was with a gentleman, a very top person in Austria. He said, sir, we have more flammable trees than you do on your coast. We don't have forest fires. We have land management. They take care of the land. They pick up the dead trees. You know, a tree doesn't burn very easily unless it's dead. Then it gets dry and it burns. The leaves on the ground, they're 5 feet thick over here. They clean the floor. And everybody said, oh, how ridiculous management of a forest. You know, they all said, like, what the hell? But they don't have forest fires and properly run locations. What we have is horrible. And we can actually dampen our forests with water that costs us nothing that will come pouring down from the north. Wouldn't that be nice? If you had dampened floors, you wouldn't have forest fires. So we'll work on that too. But I couldn't convince this guy, Gavin, to do it because he's a environmental maniac only for political reasons.
So again, I don't even know why I'm subjecting you to all those, but he once again, you know, the leaves, trees of these things called leaves, I've seen them once, twice. So again, the leaves get dry, trees dry out. And he's floating his, like, why don't you just rake it all? Gavin Newsom is extremist, even though Gavin Newsom basically spent the weekend vetoing a bunch of things that came from his state legislature, handing corporations a massive victories and wins, vetoing a strike fund for striking workers. Yeah, real big leftist, but a little bit, the biggest line, Ray, from this entire ridiculous speech when it comes to talking about California, of course, which was very Duterte-esque, was when Donald Trump floated the idea that people who shoplift should be shot.
And we will immediately stop. And some people are gonna say, oh, this is terrible, I can't believe. You know, these people are killing people when they go into the stores. You'll have 300 young people who are not looking for a good future walk into a store, big department store, and just pillage it. And if you happen to be there when they're there, they'll knock the hell out of you and kill you in some cases. And we will immediately stop all of the pillaging and theft. Very simply, if you rob a store, you can fully expect to be shot as you are leaving that store. Shot.
Oh, yeah. Claim your mugshot T-shirt also. Wanted for president. I'm sorry, Ray. The dissonance of a man arguing that someone who steals, like, I don't know, anything from diapers to, yeah, what a purse, should be shot, and then simultaneously market a photo of you having been indicted for a federal crime next to you and selling that t-shirt. Like, I think white privilege has reached, like, I don't know, like, epic space-time continuum black hole heights that, like, we've never seen before.
Yeah, and I mean, it shouldn't be that much of a surprise that he's literally like, oh, shoot him, just shoot him, because this is the guy who wanted to execute the Central Park Five after they had been exonerated for the crime that they did not commit. But to just hear him, is this a hit for the crowd? Are they feeling this? Are you enjoying the idea of,
yeah,
first of all, right? I haven't actually heard of any of these, you know, smash and grabs where someone died. I haven't heard that from any, because these stories have been sensationalized. If someone died, they would be a martyr to Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't heard of anyone dying in these large scale smash and grabs. That being said, I don't know. Maybe we should look at the economic situation that these people are in that drives them towards this type of crime, because they're not just enjoying those bags for personal use. They're reselling them because they don't have any money. Like, not to say that I think that it's justified. Generally, I don't think that people should steal, but in the grand scheme of things, those large department stores are stealing a lot more money from their workers than they're having stolen from them in retail.
Yes, stuff. Absolutely. I don't know that this, like, you know, box store fragility is just, I am so tired of the narrative. Like, oh, they're shutting down. Who cares? They've got a million other franchises. Call, they'll be fine. Whole Foods and Nordstrom will be fine. You know, Macy's, again, not so sure about that. But have you been to a mall lately? They're crushing themselves. Maybe if you break up Amazon, the little guys like, you know, Macy's and Target could have a chance. Man, malls are sad. Capitalism did this to itself. That's what happens when you've got monopolies, you idiots. Oh, no. Let's blame shoplifters. That's tight. So just a little bit of a background. Okay, yeah, there's been a little bit more. So this is Public Policy Institute of California, graphic 3, data on reported commercial shoplifting defined under Proposition 47 as entering a commercial establishment with the intent to steal property valued at less than $950 during business hours, failed to reveal evidence of increases until 2022, when the state saw a 28.7% jump from the unusually low rates of the pandemic years because everyone was inside. Even though after this sizable increase, the shoplifting rate in California remains 8% below its pre-pandemic levels. Yeah. And by the way, the big lib, radical Marxist leftist, Gavin Newsom, what did he just do? Not only did he veto a bunch of stuff that were progressive policies, he allocated like $250 million. We just covered it last week to stopping shoplifting. Was it about job training? Was it about education? Was it about healthcare? Was it about any of the affordable housing? No, it was to stop shoplifting. California is not a liberal state. It is not run by leftists. It is run by corporatists. Thank you for coming to this. I'm not going to say TED Talk because that's a really hack joke, but this portion of the show. We got to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
How do you plead to the 5 counts of conspiracy to commit intentional interference with performance of election duties?
Guilty.
And is this guilty plea being freely and voluntarily given with the full knowledge of the charges against you?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
guilty. Yes, the very first plea deal in that Georgia RICO case involving Donald Trump and 18 of his co-conspirators has dropped. And that right there is Scott Hall, who is a former, the former Fulton County Republican poll watcher and a bail bondsman. And he had a lot to do with some of the shenanigans that were going down in Georgia, again, in a county that was Republican. But look, who am I to critique the conspiracy? Hall was initially charged with 7 felonies for his connection to a breach of voting systems in Coffee County. In a Friday court appearance before Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee, he pleaded guilty to 5 misdemeanor counts of conspiracy to commit intentional interference with performance of election duties. Hall and others coordinated with GOP officials in Coffee County to improperly access an election computer system to scour evidence for supposed voter fraud. So what does the plea agreement give him? He gets probation for 5 years in exchange for a guilty plea on those misdemeanors. He's also going to pay $5,000, issue a letter of apology to Georgia voters on very, very cute stationery, serve in cursive, serve 200 hours of community service, and agree to avoid activities related to polling or administering elections. And most importantly, he has agreed to testify honestly and truthfully against his 19 co-defendants and in all other proceedings related to this case. Ruh-roh. However, it's kind of chill. Probation for 5 years, $5,000. I would take that. Ray, we'll get into the legal ramifications, but damn, feels kind of easy for trying to thwart an election. Don't you get more for actually trying to vote twice?
Yeah. And people who believe that they were able to vote in like Florida, where felons were given back the right to vote. And then Ron DeSantis crushed that. People who voted were given more time than that, who believed they had the right to vote. That aside, though, good sign for the prosecution here. He's small fish, right? Relative to the grand scale of this attempt to overthrow democracy. This guy is small.
Yeah.
But him accepting a plea deal is probably just going to be the first of many. And so many of these like lesser characters in the Trump cinematic universe, we're going to see them start to take these plea deals because they don't have Trump's backing. They don't have his support. Yeah. More like the Rudy Giuliani's that we see that are going to stick by his side for any amount of time for whatever reason there is there. But these people are going to turn on him, and that's only going to help the prosecution as these cases go on. Like, he agreed to testify truthfully against his co-defendants, the co-conspirators in this case. And I don't necessarily know how much this guy knows, right? He must know something for them to even give him this plea deal. But when we see the bigger fish in these cases start to turn, that's when, you know, the prosecution's got it locked down.
Yeah. It's definitely like sort of the food chain or the feeding frenzy of conspiracy. Like, he could finger Sidney Powell, could finger Rudy Giuliani, could finger Trump. You know what I mean? It's all sort of like goes up the food chain there. I'm sorry for using the term finger. and, you know, you obviously, with your background in law, now your law degree, right? You a lawyer officially?
No, I haven't taken the bar yet, but I do have a law degree.
There we go. Law degree. Here we go. Don't even take the bar, whatever. It's like not anyway. But yes, a former federal prosecutor agrees that the plea deal is a good sign for the prosecution. This is according to Niyama Rahmani. She was speaking to the Daily Beast, and she says, Fulton County DA Fani Willis doesn't want to try 19 defendants. She wants 18 guilty pleas and 1 trial against Donald Trump. And then she was saying, like, look, if they all wanted to stick together, that would be better for Trump. So she continued, it's better for all the defendants if they hold the line and refuse to cooperate. But it's better for each individual defendant to plead guilty and get little or no jail time. In fact, the defendants who plead earliest usually get the best deals. That's why Hall got a no time misdemeanor, because he pleaded first and agreed to testify against the others. So exactly, good on Scott Hall being the first one to fold and being like, cool, 200 hours of community service, that's a few weekends. I could do that. But right, this is, even though he's a small fish, again, it's just going to keep on like chomping up and up and up as they all take these deals. And the deals are pretty good. Again, we just said it looks like a good deal.
Right. And it's definitely going to be a domino effect here with further plea deals. Will it ever be 18 guilty pleas? No, it's not going to get to that point. It'd be awesome if it did, but there's going to be some holdouts. On the other hand, you're going to see these people, like the lawyers for Donald Trump, who have sacrificed everything in their lives for this, right? And as long as they're not buying into the sunk cost fallacy and are operating under some semblance of self-preservation, they're going to take the deals because they will lose literally everything that they have. Now, there are some people in here amongst them who I think are true believers. The woman who pretended to be a police officer and threatened an election official. She, I think, is going to be a holdout and is probably a true believer. But most of them aren't, right? Yeah. Most of these people are not true believers, and they're going to act to protect themselves in some way. They're going to take these deals, and we'll see more and more of that coming. The deals will be less good. We'll see more and more of that coming.
For sure. All right. Well, let's go to this before the hour wraps. There is a new senator from the state of California after the passing of Senator Dianne Feinstein, appointed by Governor Gavin Newsom of California. And her name is LaFonza Butler. She is currently the president of Emily's List, which is basically a Democratic like think tank PAC, runs a lot of female candidates, Democrats for office. She's going to fill in for the late Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein's Senate seat. Butler will become the first lesbian black woman to join Congress in US history, according to Newsom. She will also be the sole female black senator serving in California and only the third in US history. So as he promised, he wanted to appoint a black woman, and he did. So here is a photo of her. And more about her. Who is she? So again, she's been the president of Emily's List. It works to elect Democratic women who support abortion rights since the group's board of directors appointed her in 2021 when she became the first woman of color to lead the organization. She previously worked at Airbnb as the director of public policy and campaigns and advised Vice President Kamala Harris's 2020 presidential election. Much of her background is in the labor movement, serving as a union president in California. Jumping ahead, Barbara Lee, Representative Lee, who is running for Senate in California, actually did congratulate LaFonza Butler, even though it was sort of largely assumed that Gavin Newsom would appoint her as a congresswoman who's been serving for, you know, decades now to that Senate seat. But she did tweet, "I wish LaFonza be well and look forward to working closely with her to deliver for the Golden State. I'm singularly focused on winning my campaign for Senate. CA deserves an experienced senator who will deliver on progressive priorities. That's exactly what I'm running to do." So obviously my first question was who is this? I don't know. I do know of Emily's List. And it seems like LaFonza Butler knows the right people. She has the right connections when it comes to Kamala Harris. Emily's List sadly has drifted farther and farther to the center. It is not, even though they want to nominate and elect women, those women aren't always pro-choice or and certainly very much a pro-business entity. So Ravana, your thoughts on this appointment?
I think it's interesting that she's been framed as a union advocate because she was the president of the SEIU for a period of time. However, she is part of the revolving door. She leveraged that position to work in union, not just union busting, but anti-labor practices at Uber. And, you know, use that position, use her experience there to break into the corporate realm, right? So then she worked for Airbnb, which we all know is destroying the housing market in this country. So framing her as a union champion is absurd to me. This is a woman who, you know, was working hard to suppress the rights of Uber workers on behalf of Uber, right? She has not been appointed in spite of those practices. She's been appointed because of those practices, especially when it comes to being appointed by Gavin Newsom, who we saw spit in the face of striking workers over the weekend.
Yeah, 100%. She's in line with the rest of them, you know, sort of like, and again, let us just name, yes, it's awesome that she is the first Black lesbian woman to be in the Senate, even though it's an interim position, which sort of always feels like great, it's an afterthought. But it's also like, let's look beyond that and understand that this is someone who's absolutely doing the bidding of massive corporations and sort of in a bad faith way, exactly, leveraging that experience with labor to undermine labor. But that is the time we have for this hour, which honestly crushed. It was a great hour of news, and there is more in the aftermath. Don't go anywhere if you're on linear. We'll see you later. We'll be right back. So hold on to your butts, guys.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.